Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 587. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Kevin. How about yourself?
I cannot argue. I can't believe on the wife's birthday she decided, yeah, sure, go ahead, record a podcast. I was kind of shocked by that commentary. I was ready to pass this off to you and Jeremy, but here we are, a little bit later in the week than normal, and mostly because AEW and NXT are more palatable to us as wrestling fans currently. But we're not going to talk about either of those to start off the show. Because how can you not talk about Marty Jannetty confessing on Facebook of his own volition to murdering someone, how many years ago was it? 47 years ago?
It would be 47 years ago. He's 60 years old, so he said it happened when he was 13, so that is 1973. 47 years ago.
Yeah, that, not really the brightest idea, and, Marty's definitely had a few challenges over the years. I kind of wonder if this one is, another one of those challenges, due to, drugs and or alcohol.
Yeah, but he is absolutely leaning into this one, He did a... I have no idea who... He must not have anyone in his life to tell him not to do things. Cause he did a brief interview with a... Oh. With a wrestling website. Like a mini shoot interview. Where he went into even more detail of this incident. That once again, it could still be the ramblings of a drug-addled maniac. But... It seems very, very detailed, and yeah, I don't know what drives a person to do this. You know, if the incident is as he said, there is an element of self-defense to it. If he was being, you know, molested by an older man at the time, but yeah, he did still kill someone, and. You know, self-defense is a weird thing when you get into, you know, it being by, not by, say, shooting someone, but by a physical assault with a blunt object. He said it was a brick that he used. You know, when you repeatedly beat someone over the head with a brick, at some point you have the opportunity to stop. So at some point, does it, you know, when the person is no longer a threat to you, is it no longer self-defense? Does it then become... manslaughter or second degree? I don't know. That could very well be something for a police department and a prosecutor's office to sort through.
Yeah, but I do not think that either of us are going to pretend to be experts in no. law to determine
certainly
exactly
not the state of Georgia
what that might be.
A wild thing to just wake up one morning, or, you know, who knows, it's Marty Jannetty, maybe he doesn't sleep at all. You know, after 47 years of, you have gotten away with this. It's, maybe at some point, the people were looking for this guy that went missing. But at a certain point, you know, it's one of those, it would become one of those cases that slipped through the cracks and, you know, went cold and no one was pushing for it, and no one was looking for him. No one was looking for Marty, and Marty just drops this bizarre Facebook post detailing the incident, and then talking about his breakup with his girlfriend. That's the concerning part. I think part of it we're not talking about. You know, what is the status of this woman right now? You know, is she okay? And also, Marty Jannetty also referred to it as the first time he made a man disappear.
That one was kind of that. That was almost burying the lead when you say that was the first time. I'm like, huh? Like, come again? Like, really? Like, this has happened multiple times?
Yeah, this is something, dude. Yeah, you know, I'm certainly someone with the word detective after their name needs to be looking very much into. You know, Mario Giannetti is a man who, you know, he's traveled the world. You know, he is something of a gypsy. You know, he spends one night in some town and then leaves. You know the old thing about how, you know, a lot of serial killers were, you know, truckers or some sort of travel, had some sort of job where they were constantly traveling, so they never spent very much time in the areas with which they killed. Yeah. You know, we all knew Marty was messed up. It's been obvious for years. He holds the record for most firings from WWE in company history. his drug issues are all, and his reliability issues are always what leads to the end of his runs. But this is certainly at a whole other level.
Yeah, yes, it is. It's a very, very strange. Yeah, when you're confessing to something that is legitimate, that can still legitimately land you in jail.
Oh yeah, there's no statute of limitations here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there are a lot of rule breakings that you can come out with and talk about, and you're like, well, whatever. They're not really going to get me on that. And there are probably some other ones that maybe have a statute of limitations, but it's probably up to someone's best discretion to not mention them anyway. Yeah, murder. No time limit on that one. Especially if you're saying that this has happened multiple times. And you were very... he was very specific about dumping the body in the Chattahoochee River. And if I'm not mistaken, at least the article that I read said that the authorities were going to refer all of this information to their cold case team. And, that's not good news for him at all.
Now, the part that made me have my doubts about this is, you know, he's saying that this happened when he was 13 years old, and the victim would, I guess, be a grown man. You know, he's 13 years old, beating a grown man to death and then disposing of the body to the point where no one ever finds the guy. I have a hard time believing it. But once again, it's not like he's not, you know, he did this bizarre interview today that I have no idea how anyone thought this was a good idea to do, which is where he went into the greater detail of what happened. And it's just like, dude, it sounds, this sounds pretty much like it's something that did happen. And
I guess I've watched enough crime shows, especially ones that, since this crime, what'd you say, it was 1973?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm just going to say that the police maybe feel a little bit lazy, and don't look into things properly. I'm trying to remember when O.J. Simpson was arrested, because that was pretty much the beginning of forensics. So, what was that, 94, 95? So,
yeah, 94, 95, yes.
So, this is a solid 20 years previous to having forensics around to be able to maybe better find out what happened in any incident. There's definitely a way that he got away with this, considering the time frame, in my opinion. But, you know, again, who knows? But yeah, when you go into more detail, it's either you're just creating a whole false narrative around this, or it legitimately happened. And I don't know why you would pour gasoline on the fire, so to speak, in this situation, or, you know, maybe literally dig your own grave because of some man that may or may not have molested you 47 years ago. Guess you would hope that he has someone back from back then that could corroborate his story. If not, he's kind of screwed.
Well, no, it would be not corroborating his story. Oh, it was anywhere else at that time.
Well, I guess more the older gentleman was and if I'm not mistaken, the older gentleman was coming on to him. Because I love how the one article that I saw redacted the gay slur in it, and it's just like, the guy is admitting to multiple murders. Okay, whatever. Like, I understand and I don't even know what the redacted word is, nor do I care. But it's just like, yeah, this guy is having bigger issues than a gay slur if he's admitting to murder.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go move forward with this. It's the Chattahoochee River. Which does run through Columbus, Georgia, and there was a bowling alley of that name operating in Columbus, Georgia at the time. So that is all, you know, very possible. I mean, if the river didn't run through Marty Jannetty's town, or there wasn't a bowling alley of that name in where he grew up, then you could start saying that it's less likely. But you know, those things are very true. I have no idea what a 47-year-old body that's been underwater would possibly look like, dredged up somewhere else at some point, or yeah, that's just wild. I mean, you know, we don't talk about murder much on here.
I really try not to.
But we probably talk about it more than more often than we would if we covered tennis or golf.
I would have to say so, yes. I guess this is one of those stories that it's just going to be a to be continued kind of a situation. Because, there's going to be a lot of digging needed, and maybe not even just physically, for a body, but digging case-wise to figure out whether this may or may not have happened. So, Marty might still be running around here. I would just say that if you're an independent wrestling organization, I'd say stay away from booking Marty Jannetty. Like, I'm throwing that out there. Sure, it's a crazy thought, but maybe don't book a guy that may or may not murder you.
No. Definitely stay out of the Marty Jannetty business, and we will see where this goes.
One thing that I do not plan on seeing go anywhere is Brandi Rhodes' new female empowerment group for...
Yes, AEW Heels. Hold on, let me...
Oh, you're going to pull up the AEW proper name?
AEW Heels, a new female-focused wrestling community led by AEW Chief Brand Officer Brandi Rhodes and the stars of AEW's Women's Division, today announced the launch of its new fan membership platform powered... Female wrestling fans can seamlessly access AEW Heels, exclusive content, and other special benefits, all in a safe environment for engaging conversation and developing friendships worldwide. Yeah, and the price of this, with an annual paid subscription of $49.
Obviously, if no one out there in podcast land has figured it out, we are not female. So, nope. That would exclude us to start with. I guess I just don't get it at all. Like,
it feels like a cash grab after speaking out. What it sounds like. A way to seem like they're doing something without actually doing more to promote their women's division within the within the 2 hours of AEW Dynamite.
That is a good way to, because and I did remember her saying sometime during the week that she was the one that came up with is it called the Deadly Draw Tournament? Where
she's okay now because a lot of people came at her today and she felt the need to respond to every single one of them for some reason, which if you were a well-known person and have a Twitter account, I would never do. I would turn off notifications and go about my day. But
yes,
as we've seen, the AEW wrestlers / executives have an inability to do that until the Young Bucks shut down their Twitter accounts entirely. But she said that the idea of doing a tag team tournament was her idea, but other people are responsible for the Deadly Draw, you know, classic WCW Lethal Lottery concept being attached to it.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know what to believe, because in separate Twitter posts, both Kenny Omega and Brandi have denied being in charge of AEW's women's division.
Okay, I was wondering how Kenny Omega got pulled into this thing.
They want nothing. They want no responsibility for any of this.
Oh.
No one wants to blame. That there is no credit. There is only blame.
Any combination of us have gone over this enough that they seem to have some talented women, not enough to really have a division. And this whole tag team thing, I'm just like, man, like, I don't even know what you're trying to pull off here. Like, I don't know who half your female characters are. One of the better wrestlers, if I'm not mistaken, Chris Statlander is out for a significant period of time.
Yes, Chris Statlander's out for a significant period of time. Britt Baker will be out, at least, I believe, until All Out, which is, you know, at Labor Day weekend in September. There's quite a bit of talent out. There's talent that's stranded in Japan, stranded in Europe. So it's understandable to a degree that, you know, they don't necessarily have all the tools in their toolbox to grow their division. But there's still more they could do and in a better way to present what they have. You know, Britt Baker is the only woman in their division who is allowed to have any kind of a personality. And if you've watched any of did you watch any of the Deadly Draw on YouTube this week?
I did not.
The first round? Okay. Brandy's okay. It's a blind draw tournament, but in the silliest way possible, they had Brandy and Allie cheat so that they got to be partners. So and they've been teaming regularly. And after it was over, even though the story has kind of been that Brandy's a babyface and Allie's more of a heel who's, you know, taking advantage of poor QT Marshall and blah, 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 blah. Brandy just starts acting like this stuck up heel, which she has been a babyface since they killed the Nightmare Collective, or whatever the fuck it was called. I think it's the Collective, right?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah.
So she starts, Alex Marvez is interviewing her. She starts. Really, what she's doing is she's insulting Alex Marvez in the same way that Britt Baker insults Tony Schiavone. So basically, Brandy is essentially working this, with her character, essentially ripping off Britt Baker and trying to I don't want to necessarily say take it away from her, but I think that part will very much be something to watch as time goes on, because it came out of nowhere that Brandy, turning heel and really, as I said, talking like Britt Baker essentially.
Wow, that's just some extra nonsense on top of nonsense.
So back to this whole AEW heels, this AEW heels nonsense. Now, I put a tweet out there that got, as the kids say, a ton of engagement from people who found entertaining, where I basically called what Brandy's doing a cross between both a pyramid scam and a Ponzi scheme. Now, literally, legally, is it either of those things? No. But I question the value of what people are getting for $49, certainly. I also question the fact that Brandi Rhodes has been one of the most, how do I refer to it? She has shown an inability to stick to anything for very long in her entire tenure in AEW. I was gonna say bipolar, but I didn't want to say it like that because I don't want insult anyone who's actually bipolar or anything.
Correct.
But her character, yes. She has just not shown the ability to, not just in her portrayals on screen and her portrayals off screen and what she does off screen. It's just Brandy has not shown an ability to stick to anything for very long. And they're asking for $49 a year from people to have all these, virtual meet and greets, video conference discussions, I don't know what, exclusive talent Q&A sessions. Those are all pretty much the same thing.
Yes.
All this is three different things. customized merchandise, special promotions, themed parties, and more. I always like when you have to add that and more. the first event is scheduled for Friday, August 7th, which who knows if that's going to happen now, because that's supposed to be tomorrow, and as we'll get into, Brandy has been bullied off of Twitter. Is a Q&A session with referee Aubrey Edwards. And a social media strategy session discussion with Brandy. Oh my god. And a special session on respect and empowerment in the workplace with Keisha Ann Gray, a partner at Proskauer, whatever the heck that is. Maybe I'm taking this out on Brandy because it's, she works for a major company. She's, a fairly, her and Cody are fairly well-off people. They don't need to do this. AEW doesn't need to do this, nor does Brandy. I mean, I guess if the other women in AEW get a piece of it, I find it more agreeable, but I don't know what the revenue split is going to be on that. I'm just kind of tired of people, like, it seems like everyone is trying to make money based on trying to give people this tinkly tink, the sense of community and all these feelings. And it's just like, don't just offer people a product or a service and have that be it. And it's what bothers me. It's just that it's like it's taking advantage of people who, may or may not be the most emotionally fit, I'll say, is what things like this kind of bother me about.
Yeah, and again, I think this is something that I've kind of talked about. The whole meet and greet thing just seems a little bit foreign to me. Like, there's enough information out there about most of these wrestlers that I'm not sure what more they can give me in a Q&A session. Or a Zoom meeting. Like, what am I going to ask Hikaru Shida at some point that couldn't have been looked up on Wikipedia or, heard from a podcast that she's already done? That's where I kind of miss the value. Like, I guess $50 for an entire year isn't terrible, since that's, what, less than $5 a month?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. If you think about it in that sense. But I said, my concerns are more, what a value are you really, like you mentioned, yeah. Like, what value are we really getting people? Not that what anyone does with their money is any business of mine, if. But my concern is how long are they really going to stick to this? A schedule of, producing content and putting it out there and having it being worth $5 a month. I was looking at some of my expenses in this last month, and I had a couple of Patreons I was subscribed to, and I was just looking at how often these people were actually, updating their membership benefits, and I'm just like, I'm not really getting my money's worth. I got subscribed, but if you pay $50 up front, and in month two,
you decide
to go weeks without updating this, what do you do to get your how do you get your money back at that point? So that's why I've never really liked paying up front for any kind of service like that.
I guess that is something that I didn't honestly think about that much. Almost all subscriptions are monthly based at this point, like, unless you want something for a year. So the fact that there isn't option for a monthly payment is kind of weird, because normally you go, the monthly payment's more expensive, so you put up a yearly payment,
right,
and that saves you X number of dollars. And, you don't really have... Yeah, you don't even have that feeling like you're saving money by putting in your $50. Like, it's just a flat fee up front.
But anyway, and once again, you're asking people to pay that money, to be a part of your club, that's the cost to be a female wrestling fan and have a space where you can talk to other female wrestling fans. Basically a private message board or a Discord server. But once again, it's other people's money. But the issue has become with one Mrs. Rhodes, who is taking quite the beating on Twitter in the last couple of days, and decided to, the same Mrs. Rhodes who is selling as one of the main benefits of subscribing to the AEW Heels fan club, social media lessons with AEW chief brand officer Brandi Rhodes. She deleted her Twitter tonight, as I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
Because she couldn't handle the banter, she essentially could not verbalize her stance on this issue. She even said something along the lines of, "This is not about women's wrestling. Some female wrestling fans don't even like women's wrestling," which just made things absolutely worse.
Ooh, wow. While that statement could be true, In some respects, that's no way to lead off your new signature all female product. Like, you would hope that they would be interested in that, and then, you know, maybe they've gotten into other aspects of the wrestling more. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure if Reba, a.k.a. Rebel, actually does hair and makeup for AEW or not. But, you know, wow. I guess you could do, you know, I guess as a female wrestling fan, you could kind of get into how they costume themselves. But, I mean, I guess I'm always kind of interested in where even some of the guys come up with their ideas for trunks. And honestly, this week, I didn't notice it last week, but on AEW, I didn't realize how lazy the designer was for Zack Ryder, pretty much making the same symbol for him, but using his real initials. And I personally thought that that was some very lazy design. I guess I can understand using the same Keller palette, because I believe he's using maybe some old New York Islanders Kellers or something like that. So there is a little bit of a tie back to, you know, his hometown. So I can understand maybe sticking with the Keller scheme, but I think that that's kind of lazy. But I guess to get back to the women, like, if you're not into the wrestling side of it, there's kind of a limited amount of things that you can be into in wrestling, right? Like, other than, like, hair and makeup and kind of understanding how the outfits come together, like, I guess I'm trying to figure out what would draw you in enough. Like, if I didn't like men's wrestling, or women's wrestling for that matter, like, I guess I wouldn't even be watching the product at all. Like, I feel like you have to have some level of enjoyment of the wrestling product to want to pay for a service like this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, like I said, it's not about trying to, you know, attract more women fans to wrestling, which would be a noble and noteworthy goal if, you know, if it was a free thing that they were doing, you know, that to, you attract new fans to try to understand what wrestling is and explain things like that. That could be really cool, or if the price was, well, once again, I don't like, you know, paying things by annuals, as we mentioned, and there's just elements of this that just feel like a real cash grab to take advantage of, you know, speaking out type stuff. And yeah, I just have a lot of questions about the value. I mean, mostly when I fired off on Twitter, I didn't even think it was that funny when I tweeted it, and then it just went crazy, and it's still growing crazy tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely got a kick out of that, not even knowing exactly what Brandi Rhodes had done yet by the time I read it. And then I read it, and I'm just like, yeah.
But is that even reading the benefits or potential benefits, you know, I ran down three things that essentially mean the exact same thing. You know, it just doesn't feel like it's very well thought out. If they posted up like a schedule of their first month of events and of things of that nature, I think maybe it would be a lot more palatable that way. Other than we're gonna update this whenever we feel like. That kind of stuff I don't like, and once again, that's why I have, you know, unsubscribed from a couple of Patreons, and, you know, this last month, to, you know, we're going weeks between updating this thing. I'm like, no, you know, Get on a schedule and stick to it.
Yeah. And I guess I don't even know how you... Not how you can do that, but there just still seems like a limited number of topics to be able to update monthly, but Lord only knows. The closest thing that I can think of is like something like the Food Network magazine that we get. And I'm sure that there are some recipes that are a little bit recycled through that thing, or that, you know, different people make them marginally different ways, and they probably end up sneaking in there every few years. But yeah, not having promised content for something that you're expected to pay for is pretty bizarre. Because yeah, I do even feel like Patreon, well, at least you're supposed to be putting out X number of things to help your patrons get their money's worth, but from the way you are talking, some people just kind of slack off on that duty. And yeah, it would not be shocking that Brandy would stop doing some stuff. Like you said, she kind of has a track record of just kind of stopping doing things. And honestly, like, even her kind of, both of her gimmicks in AEW, like, they haven't even been well explained at all. Like, the Nightmare Collective was bad, and maybe the Allie and Brandy thing has gotten a little more play on AEW Dark. But I guess I still don't completely understand that situation, because I guess I still don't understand why Allie left Butcher and the Blade to start with.
They've never really explained it, other than she's madly in love, and what gorgeous young woman wouldn't be madly in love with QT Marshall? Hello, are you there? Did you?
I think that's a perfect response. yeah, silence is a good one. Yeah, that really, at least as far as I can tell, is the gimmick. And that isn't, like, that still doesn't explain anything to me.
Yeah. It hasn't been explained why QT Marshall and Dustin Rhodes are teaming. I thought Dustin Rhodes was gonna start teaming with Sonny Kiss. And then Dustin Rhodes starts teaming with QT Marshall, who, for reasons I will never figure out, is getting something of a push. And then Sonny Kiss ends up teaming with Joey Janela, and even then, that ends up mostly on Dark.
Oh, yeah.
AEW has some serious organizational problems that they need to working through.
Yeah, I mean, that is still kind of, and I guess that is just kind of another aspect of that whole paying $50 up front. Like, if you can't organize your own main product well enough to get me to invest in it, why do I want to throw another $50 in there? Is a woman,
I wouldn't.
You know, and how many times do we need to say that both Impact Wrestling and the WWE have far superior women's divisions? Like, I guess I'd be almost more intrigued by one of those two brands doing something than AEW, who, by and large, just kind of... I mean, almost all their women are no names. You know?
Yeah, and they've done nothing to, and they've, with the exception of Britt Baker, they've done nothing to fix that with any of them.
Yeah. I mean, they brought in Vicky Guerrero to be Nyla Rose's manager?
Or manager, yeah.
Whatever term
that they
use. And then
they stuck them on this, And then they were immediately stuck on this. Well, Nyla Rose did lose the and Arion Andrew the Cameron in WWE was brought out of nowhere to you know, to be Nyla Rose's tag team partner. Now she did lose the match for her, and you know, So I got, so Nyla Rose isn't going to be stuck in YouTube hell for, well, who knows, if she could also still be stuck in Dark, I guess, so she's still being stuck in YouTube hell.
Right.
But who would have made the call to bring in someone like Arion? Maybe her former coworker, Brandi Rhodes?
Oh.
Who claims to have no power in the women's division? I mean, out of the business for 5 years, then she gets called in to do this tag team tournament? She doesn't have some friend in high places?
Well, I don't even know if that's a high place, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what vitriol Brandi had to face, honestly, but you know, yeah, if you had accepted blame for and I guess that is the other thing, like, they don't really seem to sit well with blame, the Rhodes family, just in general.
No, they don't. You're just AEW executive VPs. And at points, Tony Khan himself have shown very, very thin skins. I mean, people were, you know, were giving valid criticisms, many of which we went over during our talk about this. But instead of standing her ground and holding her position, she got very defensive and rude back to people, and then eventually just deleted her entire account off of Twitter. Which once again, I have to repeat, tomorrow she is supposed to lead a seminar on social media marketing.
Yep.
That people are paying $50 for.
Oh, it is a mind-numbing thing that we have talked about here. Yes. Today. But I do think we have thankfully exhausted that topic, and that at least with the remaining time here leaves me with one at least interesting wrestling topic for the week, like actual sort of in-ring topic. The first week that we decide not to record the day after Raw has something fairly interesting happened for the first time in quite a while, which happens to be the Raw Underground, headed by Shane McMahon. Some of the superstars of Raw, I think mainly it was Raw superstars, and then it did seem like a fairly large collection of what I'm assuming are Performance Center wrestlers. Did they kind of make any mention online, because I didn't really notice, of any of the wrestlers that were involved in this segment?
I did not get any ideas on anyone other than the very large gentleman who won all of his fights in, like, the second segment, I believe.
Uh-huh.
It is Babatunde, who has been in, you know, training at the Performance Center for a number of years now. Obviously, because of his size, they have high hopes for him, as you would expect. But right. That was the first time he was on TV. I don't remember his name, the name they gave him, off the top of my head. But yeah, other than him, the only people I recognized were Dolph Ziggler and Eric of the Viking Raiders.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised that I feel like that might have been the most interesting Dolph Ziggler match I have seen in quite a few years, honestly. And it was a little bit of a qualm that I may have had. I did not feel like the offense was all that different from a standard professional wrestling match. So I was kind of wondering why people were losing quickly. Like, very quickly. And that there was no prolonged fight.
Yeah. No, that's understandable. Once again, they're trying to go with some mixed martial arts hybrid thing. The idea hasn't been, maybe it hasn't necessarily been fleshed out 100% yet. And the camera cuts, that has to go. It's worse in these segments than at the other parts of the show. And at the other parts of the show, it gets really bad too. The show is becoming, I actually, towards the end of Raw, I got a text from my older brother who was a fan of 80s, 90s, and, you know, dipped out in the 2000s, but checks back in every once in a while, or we go to shows every once in a while when we're together, just something to do. He did not get the concept at all. He was confused. He found the camera cuts nauseating. So, yeah, but I guess he also tuned in and watched. It was something that at least different and noticeable enough to try and watch it, but yeah, they definitely have to flesh this idea out more. You know, I think it was a weird way to end the show too, with the Hurt Business taking over Raw Underground. Now it makes sense because both Lashley and Shelton Benjamin have legitimate backgrounds, particularly Lashley. I'm interested to see where they go with this, but there's definitely things they need to shore up. They in general, of course, the issues with the constant camera cuts, has become a major issue with WWE television. Obviously, yeah. It's becoming a barrier for people to, if you haven't been watching for long enough, recent years long enough to get used to it to some degree, it is absolutely a barrier to people either watching again or watching for the first time. It just has to change.
Yeah.
And then with the rest of the concept, which again, they have to flesh it out more. And now if the end game for it is, say, Lashley versus Brock Lesnar in the Underground on a pay-per-view, then it's worth it. But if it's just going to be this every week, without a real end game to it, the idea is going to go the way of a number of other ideas that, you know, lasted 3 or 4 weeks and then were never mentioned again.
Not fleshing out an idea and then putting it on TV is just a terrible plan, I think, in general. And it definitely did feel like it was rushed onto TV. For
yeah, it definitely did. I mean,
reasons.
Yeah, they're desperate. That's pretty much it. And they're desperate, and it wasn't the only thing that felt like it that was rushed or that felt like, you know, they're just throwing shit at the wall at this point.
It does get just kind of bad. Like, you almost feel like you're repeating yourself every week sometimes doing these shows, which is why it's more fun to talk about Brandi Rhodes. But with as many writers as they have there, you know, it just feels like there should always be more to whatever these segments are. And like, why was Tom Phillips throwing it to Shane McMahon for the Underground? But Tom Phillips had no concept of what was going on. Like, so he knew well enough to throw it to Shane during his segments, but he didn't know anything about it to help fill us in or give us any background on it. Everything with the WWE needs more thought out, And, you know, it's another one of those things that it just does not seem like that's on the horizon right now. And it's just really tough. And it's also really tough, like, everyone was kind of excited about the Hurt Business looking tough at the end of Raw. But, I mean, you can just even look at the Zelina Vega faction and see how the WWE one week can be really high on them and then have them lose a bunch and then just go, oh, whatever, you're in a title match anyway. And then they've got to heat them back up. And it's just, I hated that the Hurt Business lost all night long. And, I mean, you can say that they got their heat back by beating down everyone at the Underground, but that just rings hollow to me.
Yeah, it definitely does. It just, once again, the show just feels very erratic and booked and, you know, created out of desperation. Heck, we haven't even mentioned yet the group of anarchists who were running wild at the Performance Center at specifically scheduled times, of course.
And they pushed over a box.
Apparently, somebody told somebody at WWE.com that we're coming. A new faction is arriving. Because, you know, anarchists love to be referred to as a faction. And apparently they have a name, even though they really didn't do anything. They're Retribution.
Yeah, even though they...
We'll see where this one goes, but...
Yeah, they retributed nothing this past week. And honestly...
They blew out a transformer that didn't do any damage, or... I don't...
Yeah.
That didn't cause a power outage?
Yeah, it caused, what, the lights to go down a couple of times?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Like, Kane makes the lights go down sometimes. Like, who gives a shit? Like, Bray Wyatt does it. Like, it did not materially affect the product. Like, if it was in the mid... And that was, I guess that's the other thing. Like, nothing happened in the middle of a match. Like, it was either at the beginning of a match or during a talking segment. Like, if they're going to be causing problems, have them cause real problems. And pushing over a box just, like, that just kind of, pushing over one of the utility boxes just reminds me of, like, oh, this is the riot squad. They're going to cause a riot. And then they, like, go down the hallway and, like, kick steel chairs. And it's just like, do you have any fucking concept what a riot is? Like, just even looking at goddamn dictionary and you can know what a riot is. But, like, these girls are, like, messing up people's hair. And it's just like, you need to do something more than that if you want it to be attention-grabbing. And, yeah, when you light... I guess the whole Molotov cocktail onto the Transformer is supposed to be important, but when you have the rest of Raw go off essentially without a hitch, who cares? Again, like, there's no consequence here. Like, yeah, there's an action,
there's
but
some kind
of... That's all.
Go ahead. Finish.
Oh, no, that's it. Was an action, and then that was it. Like, there was no consequence for the action. Like, and there isn't any reason...
If they want to do this right...
Uh-huh.
Remember when, you know, this is very early in the NWO's run, in a very smartly done thing. It was, you know, one of those nights that, you know, Raw would have been preempted for the dog show, or the tennis, it was in the summer.
Oh, uh-huh.
The NWO stormed the broadcast booth, destroyed everything, and the show went off the air like 10 minutes early. And they went right to whatever movie was playing on TNT next. That was brilliant. That had consequences. But WWE has never done invasion storylines right. They didn't do it with the invasion of WCW. the Nexus started off strong and then quickly faltered because they just everything in WWE has to fall into some kind of corporate structure or some type of narrative structure, and they don't do these kind of storylines well, and they're seeing protests and riots going on and throughout the country, particularly in the Northwest, and they think, I guess maybe they think they understand it, and it's like, so now they're going to get into politics, and it's just going to be this whole thing.
Oh, and that was another thing that was... I thought that was kind of hilarious, is that they're trying to rip off politics, but then they immediately said, oh no, this isn't politics.
Yeah, because they're cowards. But it also is going to remind me if these guys have their mission statement and it's all the ways that WWE has wronged them and all the ways that WWE has lost its way or WWE is a terrible company or what have you, or it's going to remind me of when and they want to bring about change in WWE, but and they're going to mention things that are true and are real, but they're going to be cast as the heels. It's like the last gasp storyline of WCW, the Millionaires Club versus the New Blood, where the young guys who just wanted to, the old guys to get out of the way and give them an opportunity were the heels. that whole ass backwards thing that was pretty much the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah, and
not the thing you want to replicate.
Yeah, I don't think if this fails, I do not think it's going to be the last nail in the coffin for the WWE, but...
No, the WWE is secure forever, still secure for quite some time, but they need to start making the moves that they're going to get them through the next 5 years once these TV deals are up, and who knows where everything... Who knows where the television landscape is going to be then, but yeah, once again, they're throwing a bunch of things at the wall, and it seems to be focused on Raw so far. And here's another thing. Last night in NXT, there were no sign of retribution.
Oh.
Are they going to do anything on SmackDown tomorrow, or is this, or are they only focused on Raw for no reason in particular?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. That is a good question to put out there. I guess we will have to not watch SmackDown to figure that out.
Oh, I still watch SmackDown, but
as usual, I'll probably watch it way after Friday evening. But I you did mention NXT, and I guess that's one other at least little thing that may be worth talking about, was the end of NXT with Pat McAfee punt-kicking Adam Cole's head, which to me would seemingly be leading towards a match. Like, you don't get physically involved without...
Oh, it is. It's official.
Oh.
It's official.
Oh, okay. I guess I did not
they
see that.
They went through a whole thing where they went through a whole thing where Triple H was on ESPN this morning and offered Pat McAfee the match, and then Pat McAfee, accepted the challenge on his radio show or podcast or whatever the hell he does.
Probably all of the above. It's. Well, yeah, some of the... I guess it's been kind of interesting, because I feel like Adam Cole and Undisputed Era in general, we kind of talked about it, and Rhea Ripley was also on that list. That, what do you do with these people who've already pretty much accomplished everything that you could in NXT... without moving them to Raw or SmackDown? And a special attraction match is one thing, but I don't care. Like,
yeah, no, I go totally understand.
You know, like, it's one thing, like, it's not like I thought Floyd Mayweather versus Big Show was gonna be anything, you know, special, although it did end up being quite an enjoyable match, all things considered. But you can understand why you'd get Floyd Mayweather in there. I know that Pat McAfee talks a lot about professional wrestling, or at least it seemingly, it feels like he talks a lot about professional wrestling on his podcast / radio show. But I, yeah, like, there's nothing other than the fact that that douche went to West Virginia, and I just generally not mind seeing his ass kicked for that. But, you know...
I'll give him credit.
Yeah, like, there's...
I'll give him credit. He's like... Sorry.
No, there's just nothing. Like, I just, like, I got nothing. Like, I guess I'm just kind of coming up blank. Like, I don't know why I'd be invested in Adam Cole kicking his ass.
Well, someone did bring it up. It's not necessarily for you. He is... Apparently his show is very popular with, you know, with 20-somethings and, you know, the whole, you know, dude bro thing. And maybe there's going to be, there's, I'm going to say, necessarily say crossover, because the crossover would be people who are already watching NXT and listen to his show. There would be an interest from his fan base to see this. Granted, it also involves paying $9.99 to WWE. For a streaming service,
right?
They weren't already interested in, but I could see if it, you know. Once again, we've talked about the, you know, outreach, you know, things that they can do to outreach to a younger fan base that maybe we don't necessarily get, but it's necessary to, you know, get some new fans in. So I don't fault them for that. He was doing a good job at being a complete asshole. The stuff, the constant, you know, stick pointing with about Adam Cole's size could be detrimental to Cole's future if this isn't handled right. But I don't believe that Cole isn't winning this match.
Oh.
I think that my concern would be is during that whole the whole scene and the kick, the punt kick looked good. You gotta give him that.
Yes.
You know, he's a punter, and Adam Cole knows how to sell. That worked out well.
Yeah, and
I will say that
it was a little bit of an odd position for Adam Cole to be jumping across the table to put himself in that position. But nonetheless, he was there, and they made effective use out of McAfee's already known skills.
Yeah, I guess the issue I have with the segment itself, not the greater macro issues with doing this in the first place, and, you know, focusing on Adam Cole's size, and is Triple H came dangerously close to bogarting the scene, let's shall we say, especially with him going right at McAfee and shoving him, and it's like Triple H is obviously a bigger star than Adam Cole. He's a bigger guy than Adam Cole. It looked more physically intriguing to watch Adam Cole. McAfee versus Triple H than McAfee versus Adam Cole. So if they do a thing where McAfee actually beats Adam Cole and then Daddy Triple H has to fight his battle for him, that is completely counterproductive. But I don't think that's what's going to happen.
I would be pretty shocked. I mean, it did kind of crack me up. I'm like, yeah, evidently a punter is larger than Adam Cole.
I imagine that a punter would be, but, you know, Adam Cole is small by wrestling standards. He definitely is. Even modern wrestling standards, he's a pretty small, slight guy.
Yeah.
And it's we've yet to see him on the main roster with all the other, you know, in the land of the giants. So, which.
Well, and they've even, honestly, for the most part, because he, did he have a singles match with Keith Lee?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's where he lost the title, yeah.
That was a singles match. I was thinking that was a three-way match for some reason. But he hasn't really faced Damian Priest and or Dijakovic. So they've even, on NXT, kind of kept him out of the mini land of giants that they have.
Yeah, they definitely have. So yeah, they've kept him with smaller guys. Let's see, this is the direction they're going. They're hoping that it could potentially reach a new audience. They think it'll be good for Adam Cole. We'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, once again, I'm just not that big of a sports guy, period. So, and, you know, he's not, and Matt McAfee really isn't a name, even in the pantheon of retired NFL players.
No.
His podcast has a following, but not necessarily the biggest following. It's not really, once again, it's one of those things that I'm willing to shrug my shoulders and say, it's not for me.
He's
a good enough athlete. But Matthew is a good enough athlete, and, you know, hopefully, and that they can make this work.
Yeah, they've had enough. I think it's been well done enough, and they've kind of strung it out that it makes some sense. And again, like, Adam Cole needs something to do that isn't kind of going right at the title again, in my opinion, especially since he lost fairly resoundingly to Keith Lee.
Yeah, he did, and this is definitely a face turn. This is a total face turn for Adam Cole. And the interesting part, I guess, will be if the rest of Undisputed Era goes with him, or if he finds himself excommunicated out of the group. Them wrestling each other is the only thing left to do, I guess, if they're going to stay in NXT. They fought everyone else over and over again.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to get... just the fact that they were mentioning in the main event of NXT that Undisputed Era would have been their fourth reign as NXT Tag Team Champions... I was just like, oh, man, okay then. You know, there's not a whole lot of two-time NXT champions for any title. And for the fact that one of the tag teams could be heading in for a fourth reign is... Yeah, I don't think that's for the best. And the funny thing is I think Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly could translate quite well onto the main roster as a tag team.
Yeah, absolutely they could. I think all four of them are. It's not even about obviously they deserve it, but I think that the time is now. It's we're actually past the time. Hopefully it happens soon.
I guess with that that one wrapped up, is there anything else to cover before we mosey on out of here?
Nah, I think we're pretty good.
Okay, well, it's time for the old plugs. He is at Stunt Cali. I am at DeFrango11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you can rate us, go ahead and do so, and have a good night.